So it was literally 10 days ago on Thursday, September 20th, when the building committee learned that the permitting bidding process would take longer than anticipated by at least a couple of months. We'd had the dry run for services at Angevine's just the night before. We'd already had 3 planning meetings and countless emails and calls about the extravaganza service we were going to do this Sunday to caravan to Angevine. Many of our groups had already planned their October meetings at off-site locations. The offices were already moved, and they're still in Louisville along with the copier. The packing party for September 22nd was already impeccably planned by Julie McKenzie and Robin Wathwig. We were ready. We were so ready. The board met late into the evening on Thursday and returned again the next morning, allowing for sleep to usher in perspectives. And they decided on Friday morning to postpone our move out of this building to allow time for thoughtful analysis and planning. They worried, as did I, about the loss of momentum, the disappointment after gearing up for all this change. But like all the Who's in Whoville on Christmas morning, y'all showed up on Saturday for the packing day, ready to go to do whatever work was necessary to move us forward. And then again last Sunday, this room was packed, and we covenanted again to remain flexible in this year of adventure. Now, I have to admit, the building in its current state with bare bulletin boards and bookcases, you know, you can see the weird paint on the wall and the holes in the walls, it still looks a little bit like the homes after the Grinch visited them. At the same time, I continue to be amazed and inspired at how people are taking this setback in stride. Countless of you just shrugged your shoulders and said, delays are a part of construction. And on we go. We are a resilient bunch. And it has served us well for many, many years. Failed plans should not be interpreted as failed vision, writes author and pastor John C. Maxwell. Visions don't change. They are only refined. Plans rarely stay the same and are scrapped or adjusted as needed. Be stubborn about the vision, but flexible with your plan. We are a people with a vision that we are already living in its nascent seed form, the vision of becoming and being a center for spiritual exploration and justice making right here in East Boulder County. And we're already doing so much of that work, and that work won't stop. We also know that our facilities are too small to house us and are limiting the full development of this vision. But to that vision, we hold strong, even as plans and timelines are changing. As I thought about the patience that is needed of us in this moment and came up last Sunday or Saturday with the new title of Hurry Up and Wait, When Vision Requires Patience, I realized how often our vision does require patience in so many areas of our life. I thought about the vision of wanting to have children and the patience needed when one has infertility, or the patience needed in the adoption process, or the patience to wait for the right job rather than settling on any old job, the patience to wait out a chemo cycle with the vision of being healthy again. So often, our vision for our own life of fulfillment doesn't match the timeline we want. Until Thursday morning, this was the thread I was going to follow in my sermon. I am, by my very nature, an incrementalist. I totally believe in the step-by-step process for change. Bishop Untener's words ring true in my mind and in my lived experience. And I resonate with the theology of our Unitarian ancestor, 19th century abolitionist, the Reverend Theodore Parker, who said the arc of the moral universe is long and bends towards justice. That line was picked up by Martin Luther King Jr. and often attributed to him. Patience is important. So many times in our lives, it is important for patience so that a vision can flourish. And for the most part, my perspective has served me well, especially I'm finding now as a spiritual leader in a congregation in a construction project. This was where I was going to go today. It's my comfort zone. And this is where I feel I need to give warning signs, a little warning note in this sermon. We're about to take a significant turn here and move into the less comfortable zone of our current events. Driving to an interfaith clergy meeting at about 9 a.m. on Thursday with Colorado Public Radio playing, I heard the testimony of Christine Blasey Ford before the Senate Judiciary Committee, as I'm sure many of you did as well. And I realize that this is not the week to preach a simple, comfortable sermon about patience. Because in some instances, and in many cases, patience and its sister virtue, silence, are the necessary ingredients to preserving an oppressive and often violent status quo. And there is a bad theology out there that has been pervasive for centuries, and especially preached especially but not exclusively to women, that espouses patience and silence in the face of abuse as some sort of a redemptive act that brings people closer to Christ. And that belief isn't just a Christian belief. It's a belief that's permeated in our culture. That belief is nowhere near my reading of the understanding of the life of the man Jesus, who was a liberator in every sense of the word. And it's nowhere in our Unitarian theology, even that which comes from our Christian roots, because our theology is life-giving. Oppression and abuse is never something to be tolerated, never a holy act. After listening to that testimony, I arrived at my meeting shaken, not because I am personally a victim of sexual assault, but because I spent my high school years at those parties, and I bet many of you did too. And I could have been the one who walked up the stairs in that moment, and I don't know which one of my friends were the ones who did. It is so pervasive. And because I know that her experience is not only isolated by the fact her experience is not an isolated experience, we know that. And we know that it's happening today in the high school parties that our children are going to. There is so much I could talk about here, and patience is not among the topics. Where I landed on this morning was in the area of truth storytelling and truth, perhaps because that's where I will find my hope. The first half of our meeting, our interfaith meeting on Thursday morning, was just sharing our own reactions to the hearing, our own stories of pain, and our own varying theologies. The theology of forgiveness, to the theology of an unshaking mandate for justice, recognizing the intersectionality of the way power and privilege keeps oppression in place. Whether we are working on immigration, or mental health issues, or gender issues, or sexual violence, there is an intersectionality about the way power and privilege are kept in place. Right? When you look at that Senate committee and the people in power there, They are people whose relatability is going to be closer to that of Brent Kavanaugh than of Dr. Ford. The dismantling that needs to happen on so many levels.
Revolution.
Thank you. Now, Theodore Parker also said, truth stood on one side and ease on the other. And it has often been so. The truth that I'm interested in here is not the he said, she said truth. That's not the stuff of sermons. Y'all can debate that yourselves. But the truth about the patterns of oppression that remain hidden and the number of stories that create a societal truth about sexual violence in our culture that have remained hidden out of fear and shame and an innate understanding of power relationships of those in marginalized identities because they need to know about power for their own safety. Christine Blasey Ford had a tremendous amount of courage. And she was carried on the shoulders of the Me Too movement, which was carried on the shoulders of the Black Lives Matter. Yeah, am I right? All right. Because then it's going to go like this, see? Which was carried on the shoulders of the Black Lives Matter movement. We are no longer willing to keep these stories silent because silence is our death. And silence robs our souls. 20th century Jewish feminist activist Muriel Rukeyser wrote, "What would happen if one woman told the truth about her life? The world would split open." This hearing split open the world, split open our hearts. She's not the only woman who told her story, but she told it in such a public way. Now, I'm not advocating that everybody needs to tell their stories. That's not what I'm saying at all. Please hear that. Please hear that. That is a personal and private decision. But I think it's important, and I'm grateful for people who are choosing to do that. And because of Blasey Ford's courage, the National Sexual Assault Hotline spiked 140% just during the testimony itself. And if you personally, if your heart has been split open this week, and I know many hearts have, please do reach out and get the support you need. Do whatever it is you need to be gentle with yourself. Speak to a trusted friend. Contact me or our lay pastoral care associates. Call a hotline. Find a therapist. This is tender and deep stuff and painful. You need not go it alone. And I want to also make sure I note that this is not relegated to white people or women alone. Of the people who shared their experiences of sexual assault with me this week, one of them was a man and one of them was a person of color. And that's just since Thursday. There are no boundaries on race and class when it comes to these issues of oppression. And I, for one, am feeling anything but patient. I am brokenhearted, and I am angry. Thank you. And I don't know what to do with it yet, but I know I can't keep that to myself. And I find hope in what I'm hearing. I find hope in the sharing of stories. And on this particular topic, I'm finding hope that our congregation, along with the United Church of Christ, has for years been providing comprehensive sexual education. Our 7th and 8th graders were just this weekend at a retreat. And as a parent of a 7th grader, the curriculum is filled with things about consent. We need to teach the next generation of women and men what consent is, and what mutual respectful relationships are. I truly believe we can turn this around. I truly believe we can turn this around. I believe we are at a place, that turning point, because of the courage of people to tell their stories. As soon as the chorus of hard truths are spoken aloud and the pattern is revealed, we can begin to dismantle these systems that have felt unshakable. But you can't argue with thousands and millions of voices. And I find hope in our justice-seeking communities, in this one and in other areas of our liberal religious tradition, where we are working to fight oppression wherever we see it, where we choose not to ignore the pain of the world, but move persistently without compromise to build that just and more compassionate world. These are challenging and complex times. Let us stay strong and loving and caring for one another as we seek to move through it. And just as committed as we ever were, and even more, to building a world where all people can feel safe. May this be our promise and our prayer each and every day.
Amen.